raised chickens.
Oh, that's right.
I gave you a book on how to raise chickens.
Yeah.
Did you read it? Actually, you did it
back to me.
Well,
you did.
I put
one in the mail. 6:30 for the final
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will call the meeting to order. It is 6:32. Trustee Kopisch.
Here.
Trustee Gemmers.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Gass.
Here.
Trustee Zeller.
Here.
Are there any proposed modifications to the agenda from the board or from the staff? Is there anyone visiting who'd like to see an item moved up or down on the agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to adopt the agenda as submitted?
So moved.
Trustee Gendrich, is there a second? Trustee Dart, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Any announcements this evening?
I do have a couple. First of all, I want to let you know that you were notified recently from the Wisconsin Historic Society that we did receive that second grant that we applied for, and that was for the two municipal buildings, the community center and the water building on Green. So we'll come back to you to determine if you want to go ahead with the water building on Green or if it'll be both of them or just one. But I've not gotten the final paperwork, just got an email saying that we were awarded. So that was a good thing.
Great.
Yep. Also, I put on your counter, and I emailed it to you, the letter from the Wisconsin Historic Society, and it just is in regard to our intensive survey and kind of formally saying it's been accepted and approved by them. So it's just a letter I wanted to pass on to you to let you know that that's all taken care of as well. And then we also were notified recently that we are invited to go to the second round of a grant for... It's called the TAP grant, which is a transportation improvement grant, and it is for the Webster School Sidewalk Project. We had applied for it a couple years ago through the Safe Routes to School program. We reapplied, we made it through the first round, and we have to get some more information out to them by the end of March. And that grant is about almost a $400,000 grant. It's an 80-20 match for that particular grant. So the intern and I and Craig are going to work together on it and get it in by March 28th, and hopefully we will receive the grant, and then it really encompasses a lot of sidewalk work around the Webster School.
Great. Good. Any other announcements? Yes, Brad.
Due to an oversight I had with our senior center director, looking at making a change to her monthly stipend that she received from 220, or the breakdown on her daily or weekly allotment is currently about $16 a week, to change it to $20 a week. So if the board doesn't have any issues with that, I'd like to move forward. It was an oversight on my behalf, and it'll be something that we'll be bringing back in the future in the 2015 budget, because the amount that she has paid is very minimal.
Yeah, Brent and I talked about this. It was an oversight. We have it in the budget, and it equates to, we pay her by the day or something, right? Is it by the week? It comes out to right, it comes out to be below minimum wage if you were to do hourly. She's not paid hourly, though, so it was definitely an oversight. Thank you, Brett. Trustee Green?
We're on announcements, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, I had to take a minute to look this one up. No.
Moving on.
In March 13th, well, no, I had to get my email to look for this one because I forgot to print it off, so sorry. March 13th, there's a meeting regarding Riverside Drive here at the Village Hall at 4 p.m. How late do you think that's going to go, Craig?
It'll go until 6 o'clock, I'm sure.
Okay, well, because I know we have some residents who don't get off till after 5. So, okay, and the DOT will still be here that whole time in discussion and...
This is for the community-sensitive design group.
Yeah.
So, you know, the public can attend, but it's really for that group of 20 that are part of that development of the community-type approach to the Riverside Drive project. So I assume they're going to have a presentation, but then they're going to work with the group in terms of what's coming up and how to plan for it.
I just know we have a lot of residents interested, so I'm glad they can come.
They can come, but it's not a presentation
right.
on design. It's the working group on, you know, sidewalks and bike routes and lighting and other things.
And is this on our website? This meeting notice?
I'm not sure if that's posted.
Okay. Because I didn't find it anywhere besides email. So if we could stick it up on there just in case people are interested, that would be great. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Hearing none, we'll move on to public appearances. Is there anyone who would like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
Tim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I have just two comments. One, the 200-year anniversary of the start of Brown County and of Galloway will be coming up in 2018, and our Historic Society is now has been doing research on the past 200 years. So anybody interested is welcome to join us. And then secondly, there was a historic preservation meeting last week to review the minutes from the previous meeting, which I had objected to. They were altered and rewritten before they got to the meeting, and they still don't reflect what actually happened at the meeting, and it actually doesn't reflect who was in attendance. Steve was in attendance, and Penny was in attendance, and Steve's asked some questions. So at some point, the minutes that will be presented to you and that were approved by the committee without discussion will need to be redone so they actually accurately reflect what was actually told. The meeting that was the presentation by the state is an important training meeting. It contained a lot of important information, and specifically there were questions on regulation of people who don't want to be in historic districts and don't want their properties regulated, and the official stance of the state was that, you know, I'll just read it here, when actions allow owners to opt out, which was the key word in there, of regulatory control or consider the recommendations of the commission as advisory, the commission holds no true regulatory powers. The CLG must conform with all the above requirements, or the state historic preservation officer may revoke the CLG certification, and then you lose any federal funding. So, and that's on their website, and I was aware of that, and I asked him at that meeting, but his response never made it into the minutes. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 5, action regarding the adoption of resolution 2014-01 authorizing $4 million in general obligation bonds for street improvement projects. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Gass?
Second.
Discussion? Mr. Byrne, would you like to?
We have with us this evening Mr. Joe Murray from Springstead. And what we'd like to do is take a few minutes. Joe would like to kind of give you an overview of the bond issue, the schedule, the elements, and so forth, so you're a little more familiar with it. And also, this is the first time that we've worked with Springstead, so it'll give you a little bit of background on Joe and the company itself. So if that's okay, we can go ahead with that.
Great. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Joe Murray from Springstead. As Craig mentioned, I'm pleased to be here this evening. We appreciate the opportunity to be selected by the Village Board to serve as your financial advisor on your 2014A borrowing for the street and utility improvements. This evening is the start of the process to continue moving forward. We've been working with staff and developing a financing plan for you to move forward based on approximately $3.9 million of project needs for street and utility improvements. We've identified, developed a plan that we'll present to you this evening, and you've seen some of the numbers, I believe, in your agenda packets, based on doing a $4 million issue, a general obligation, which was secured based on being the repayment sources through property taxes, so it provides you with the lowest interest rates possible, as opposed to doing it as a utility revenue deal, and also it saves you money by doing one larger issue as opposed to one property tax, general obligation, and another based on utility revenue. If you have two series, so it's better to do this based on one issue. Financing plan is based on having level debt service, which will also provide you with additional debt capacity in the next 2 to 3 years to finance future capital improvement plans that the village is working forward on. Based on the structure that we presented, the first interest and principal payment would be in April of 2015, and would run through 2034, and we've projected that to have a true interest cost of 3.63%. You might have heard that rates have been increasing, and they have, from where they were about 9 months ago, but they still are remaining relatively low compared to where they have been in the past historically. Unfortunately, this isn't last year, but it's still better than it was 3 years ago, so there is some good news about that. The repayment of the bonds would be allocated back between property taxes and the associated proportional share for the utility work based on each project segment. I also wanted to make sure that the board is aware, I believe you are, your involvement with the Central Brown County Water Authority. We are the financial advisor for the Water Authority as well, and we're working with them to try to look at refunding their Series 2005 bonds, which were the main borrowing of over $100 million to initiate the Water Authority and provide the water source that you enjoy. But as part of that refunding, your portion of that the authority's debt represents about approximately 22%. That's based on your annual minimum water purchase through the agreement that you have. If the authority were to issue then more than roughly $45 million, your share of that would exceed $10 million of tax-exempt debt. The community can only issue $10 million of tax-exempt debt a year to maintain what's called bank qualification status. If you have bank qualification status, that means that the banks can purchase the tax-exempt debt and still receive some tax-exempt benefits. If you exceed that and lose your bank qualification, you've lost a large investor group that would be buying it. So as such, it winds up costing you additional money at higher interest rates because there's not as many investors to pull it from. We're projecting that the loss of the bank qualification status will be approximately 50 basis points or a half of a percent. The plans at this point for the authority are looking like we will do a partial or a full refund of the Series 2005A bonds late this summer or early part of the fall. And we are continuing to monitor markets closely to try to time that as optimally as possible. But based on the assumption at this point that you will be, the authority will be issuing more than $45 million, we have to proceed with the plan that this will be on a non-bank qualified basis. So if the Central Brown County Water Authority plans change between now and May, we can change that for the bond sale and the sale of it. But at this point, we're going on the assumption that the authority is going to do a refunding later on this year. The attached to the information that went out in your packets also included a calendar of the major events proceeding forward with this borrowing. Our plan is to do the sale on May 6th, which would allow for the proceeds to be received by the village the latter part of May in time to make your June payments when the construction for the street projects is expected to be underway. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. The two resolutions that are on your agenda, item 5, resolution 2014-01, is a general resolution simply stating that you will issue not more than $4 million for the purpose of street improvement projects. by statute, we need to publish that in the paper for a 30-day period in order to proceed, and that resolution is simply the one that will be published in the paper. The second resolution, 2014-02, is essentially the same resolution. However, it authorizes staff to proceed to work with us in developing the necessary documents to proceed for that sale on May 6th. That I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Mayor, I didn't go up to the website to look a little bit at the history of your company. Can you just give us some notes on the history of the company?
Sure. Be glad to. Springstead, we're an independent financial advisory firm, which means that we do not buy or sell your debt. Our job is to help you get to the market to get the best interest rates possible. We will proceed with this bond sale on a competitive basis on May 6th, so that the underwriters that will be selling your bonds will be competing against each other, and we think that's the best way to get you the lowest interest rates possible, similar to bidding for your street construction projects. We have been a firm, independent financial advisor since 1959. We've been serving Wisconsin clients since that time. We've had an office in the Milwaukee area since the mid-1980s, and so we're well-established in Wisconsin in providing financial advisory services. We have 6 regional offices across the country, but our main home office is up in St. Paul, and where our roots, if you will, come from being the upper Midwest.
So you have to travel back to Milwaukee tonight?
Not tonight. No, I'm actually going to the north.
Trustee Kokers, the assumptions about the Water Authority, as far as you know, they're pretty safe assumptions, or Mr. Byrne?
Craig is a little more up to date on that piece of it.
Now, the plan is to, at this point, the plan is to at least partially refinance the Water Authority debt. I believe it's a $50 million target by September-October time frame, and it could be the entire debt refunded, but at least it's targeted for the first portion, those notes that are callable first. Obviously, if in the next month or so it turns out that that's not going to proceed, then we'll change this borrowing, if we can, to be tax exempt. Because this affects a couple communities. Actually, 3 communities are affected by this. The Pierre Bellevue and ourselves, all 3 are borrowing. So that's what's driving the decision from the Water Authority, because it does affect the 3 communities. So if it does change in the next few weeks, we'll make that modification. But right now, it looks like it will be at least partially refunded.
Thank you. Any further questions? Trustee Gendry?
What's the difference hoped for the current borrowing rate from the authority for that 50-odd million and the perceived new rate? Any idea what that difference is? Or hoped for, maybe? What they're paying now versus what you're hoping to get?
The savings that we are targeting is to try to save at least 3% net present value on whatever size of borrowing we do. I don't have that number in front of me, but the partial refunding that we looked at just last week, I believe the net present value savings was about $2.2 million, which was about 7%, if I remember right, on the allocation. That obviously changes as interest rates change, et cetera. As I said, we're working with the underwriter that was selected to monitor the markets closely. Part of the issue with the authority is also the internal workings that will need to take place between all the member communities to make some revisions to the water sale agreement on some of the bond covenants. When you created the authority back in 2005, there was a lot of requirements that you put in to provide security to the bondholders and investors at that time, which we think you can lessen up if you free up some cash position, which will allow us to reduce the size of that future borrowing, which helps with the refunding. The goal is to provide the most savings and free up as much cash as possible for the authority and the member communities to receive the best benefit.
And Mr. Burton, Trustee Kopers, I mean, my understanding is the workings within the authority have been pretty smooth, and people have been able to get things done pretty easily. Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Burns.
Thank you.
Any further discussion or information with regard to this item? There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 6, action regarding the adoption of Resolution 2014-02, providing for the sale of $4 million general obligation street improvement bonds, Series 214A. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Kopisch?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Green seconds. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 7, action regarding considering the transportation fee for transporting a dog or cat to the Humane Society. Is there a motion with regard to this item, or do you want to hear from Mr. Roberts first? Trustee Gass.
I'll move that we adopt the $50 per animal transport fee.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Zeller seconds. Discussion? All in favor? Oh, Trustee Gass, did you have something?
No, I was just saying Mark did a nice job summarizing the memo, and one, we should have one, and two, we're significantly below what the neighboring municipalities are. It would offset the cost. You know, if people lose their animal, they should expect to pay upon retrieval. It seems pretty fair to me.
Actually, this should go to five because the one brought this kind of thing to someone caught it. So.
And yeah, my question with a lot of these things is that we're often very far below in terms of the fees that we charge. If $50 is enough, the right people should be taking care of their pets. Right? I think this is probably a good place to start. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 8, action regarding the increased license fee for unspayed, unneutered dogs. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
Move to amend the fee to $30 for unspayed or neutered dogs.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart seconds. Discussion? Trustee Zeller?
Just clarification, Debbie, is that the license is a one-time? A one-time,
or is it each year?
Each year,
January 1st,
the owners need to come in for a renewal of their license,
correct,
whether they're neutered or not.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
And also, we'd like to, if we can, if this passes, we'd like to start this in November when we, it's the first. We start registered animals in November, so instead of making this start in January, which will wait another year, we'd like to start doing it in November.
For the 2015 licensing year.
2015.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be the earliest you can get your license in 2015, so if we can initiate it then.
Okay.
Then we can get the information out and let people know what the fee is.
Okay.
Roughly, how many licenses do we generally issue, roughly?
More than the cat licenses, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not near as many dogs as we have in the village.
Yeah. And of those, and any idea, rough? And of those, how many are spayed and how many are
I don't
not?
Have that with.
All right. Well, big question.
Really no idea. Carry it front might know more, but it's okay. Going to take the license, but not sure.
We can get that information to you, gentlemen, after the fact, but we should have thought of thinking of getting it, but we just didn't get it together.
More than the three people that license their cats before we get that.
I can live with the ambiguity on that.
Anything further? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Item 9, action regarding the revision of the neighborhood electric vehicle ordinance. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
Move to approve with Mr. Roberts' changes attached.
Is there a second? Trustee Gass?
I'll second.
Discussion? I'd like to get an update from either Tracy or Mark with regard to why this is being updated for the
also
purpose of the
there. The middle of the ordinance, B, that was changed to C. The last sentence says Village of Alloway, Direct Enforcement Officer 2. I'd like to strike out 2 since we do not have a Direct Enforcement Officer 2.
Good, thank you.
Also, this was I've received a few calls, not a lot, but a few calls from people asking to use golf carts to drive in the village, and those aren't considered a neighborhood electric vehicles. I guess some time ago, one of the residents had this ordinance put in place so they could people could drive these vehicles. I have not seen any, have not heard anybody even using these vehicles. Even had to look them up. I never heard of them until I got here. So I actually had to look up to see where they are. Cute little things. And I have to see where they would be practical for, well, like Debbie could even drive one come to work. I see they're practical for a day.
Get on Debbie.
Get over 30 miles an hour.
She
just drives slowly. Picking on Debbie.
But the thing was most golf carts and trying to explain to people that a golf cart was not considered an electric vehicle. And the other thing to change was the old ordinance had there about you couldn't drive on LeBron because the pier had not adopted a neighborhood vehicle ordinance. They do now have one. At the time, I guess, when this was written, they didn't. But they do now. So you can drive it on LeBron now.
Because I remember the woman who initiated this didn't live in Alloway, I don't think. She just passed through Alloway on her way to work. And so we had to talk about
going.
Where the county highways were and where, you know, make sure she stayed off of those roads. But this, you know, this was pretty big. This was before, but the Prius was really huge. And we even explored as a village having some of our village vehicles be neighborhood electric vehicles. When the price of gas was, you know, over $4 and it didn't seem like it was going to, you know, stop there.
You just can't do the village golf cart anymore.
No, I know.
Trustee Gannis?
No, I mean, I'm in support of the motion. It's just procedurally. I mean, I like it like this. You know, I mean, because a lot of times in the past we've seen, you know, general statements on, you know, we need to modify the ordinance because of this or this or this, and think about it and talk about it. But it's nice when you can actually see the red line version and you go, yep, that makes sense, and then we can approve it right away, and we don't have to debate it for 5 years like the parking ordinance.
Well, I was, when you said red line version, I automatically thought of that ordinance. Quite a few red lines. Yeah, I agree. This is really nice, easy to read, and straightforward. Thank you, Mom.
We need to adopt an ordinance, though.
Yeah.
So it'll come back.
It will come back, right. So we're voting on to move this through the process, right? I already have a motion in the second. Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 10, action regarding the denial of the insurance claim for 2415 Beaumont Street. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to deny the claim based upon the recommendation of our insurance carrier.
Is there a second? Trustee Green? Discussion? Appreciate the detail. I think we had one not too long ago where we didn't have much to go on. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Item 11, action regarding the approval of CSM for 414 West Lazar Avenue. Tracy, do you want to give a 2-second background? I know you wrote the memo, but for the purpose of your folks here,
sure, I can. If you will use the one that's on the counter, I got this today. The surveyor made the changes that can come out of Planning Commission. But basically what we have is the lot that's on the river, the end of Lazar, and then we can divide it into two lots. There is an existing home on the site, which you can see on the CSM. The concern that Planning Commission had was the existing home is with the new two lots. Is 12 feet, has 12 foot rear setback. The requirement is it has to be a minimum of 15. So to subdivide this lot would be in violation of our village ordinances. So it's coming before you tonight, and I know there's a gentleman here from Mile that can get into it a little further and explain, but it's coming for you tonight to see if you will approve it not with some of the conditions that are in your memo.
Basically, the gentleman that is looking at buying it is going to close, I believe, shortly, maybe tomorrow. And he would like to have some kind of a guarantee that he can subdivide the lot before he closes on the property. What my recommendation is on the property, I'm speaking with the building inspector, is that if the village board is comfortable with it, you make a conditional approval, and that the home has to be removed by December 31st of this year. If it is not done by that time, then the CSM has to go back through the process and would have to come back to the planning commission through the village board for approval. And you're approving it, but we will not sign off on it. Debbie will not sign the CSM until the time when the home is removed. So it allows them to close, having an idea that it would be approved once the home is removed, because it does meet all the other village requirements.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just how comfortable you are with it. And like I said, there's a gentleman from out. If you have any questions from him as well.
Before I entertain specific questions about the property, we know that we're going to have three trustees who are not running for re-election, so the board is going to look much different come the end of the year when this house has to be removed. Are there any implications for binding future boards by a decision that we've made, given this? It's not an official, right? It's conditional, so I'm not sure if there are any implications there. Trustee Gass, do you see any?
No.
Okay.
Because it would be a conditional approval. I mean, we're giving approval, but it won't be a finalized approval. The CSM won't be recorded until a certain condition is, you know, objective condition is satisfied. You know, if they satisfy it, then our action is definitive, and if they don't satisfy it, then as Tracy alluded to, they have to go back to the plan commission and the CSM process. So I don't see a problem.
Trustee Zeller?
Why would we permit or allow so much time to elapse? Why don't we have a much, much more definitive, sooner date on the removal of the building?
And you certainly could. Talking to the surveyor, he feels that they would have it down within 6 months. But he said if you could give it a year, then for sure it would be down by then. But, yeah, you could certainly put a shorter time span on it if you wanted to.
They can have that building down in 6 hours.
You're probably right.
Yeah. Trustee Gass?
What is one point? I mean, in terms of the building coming down, I'm assuming that that's what the people want anyway. And we're not forcing them to take the building down, you know, no. just to comply with a, you know, three foot variance on a setback.
The guy,
could you come up? Thank you. Could you state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
My name's Larry Blatchford. I'm one of the partners at Mountain Associates. The gentleman that we're working with is more concerned about being able to purchase property with the idea that he can divide it. He doesn't have any problem tearing the house down. His intent is that he's going to tear the house down and probably build a home for himself on the northerly lot. And at that point in time, we have to show this house on this lot the way it is now by state law. When this CSM is signed and approved, there will either be another house on, because he can get a building permit. If he tears this one down, he can get a building permit to put on lot two. So there will either be no houses at all on either one of the lots, or else there will be a new house that's constructed on the lot that's vacant now, or no. The house will be gone, and at that point in time, the two lots meet the village's code. And at that point in time, that's all he's looking for. I think the conditional use that Tracy mentioned and everything would be satisfied with him. Then he could, without any questions, could go ahead and buy this property with the idea that he can eventually sell a lot.
Tracy, what are the other conditions that were met?
Some of the other conditions that came out of Planning Commission as well as Brown County. Now, certified survey map also has to be approved by Brown County. And they've gone through the process and they've gotten their letter to the property owner as well. But you'll see on the map, the new one, there's an ESA building setback. That was not on the original CSM, so that was placed under the recommendation of Planning Commission as well as Brown County Planning. West Lazar Avenue was Lazar Avenue that needed to be made West Lazar. They did not show the utility easement. You see a 12-foot utility easement on the south end of the property as well as the east end, so that was added to the plan. And then River Lane Street is actually, it should just be River Lane Street, that's come off of there. But those are the changes that were part of the review from Brown County and from Planning Commission as well.
Right. I guess I'm asking, on what basis would we ever be able to deny someone dividing a lot like this if they meet all the requirements in terms of the map and they meet all the criteria? Would the board have just the authority to say, well, too bad, you're not going to divide the lot?
If they meet all the requirements of the zoning code and the requirements to put a lot, like the minimum lot size, they can meet the setbacks, that type of thing there, they can certainly subdivide that lot. We could not.
We cannot prevent that.
Right.
So why do they need a reassurance beforehand? If they meet all the criteria, then, right, there's nothing we could do if the building is indeed removed.
Right.
There's nothing we could do to prevent the person from dividing the lot. So why does the person need reassurance or pre-approval from this board?
He just wants self-satisfaction. We've advised him to the point where the CSM meets every one of the village's code.
Right.
They can't deny it. It's more or less a time frame that if we come back again, now we have to hit all the meetings and everything like that. This is something that as soon as this is done, if he tears down the building in 6 hours, we can come in here and give it to Deb and shoot the sign.
Okay, so it's just a time thing. And I agree with Trustee Zeller. There's no reason that this has to be all year. If we're really trying to save time by doing a pre-approval process, then it seems to me the intention is to get this thing down really quickly and get something going up. I don't want to get, we've had this with other developers before, that you sort of make a commitment and agreement, and then 6 months later or 9 months later, it's, well, we did this, and, oh, I spent this money to do this, and now I'm in a tough spot. Won't you change the rule? I just don't want to get into that. I don't want to get into that game. I don't know you at all, and I don't know the petitioner at all, so I'm not saying there's anything about you that would lead me to believe that's going to happen. We've just been put in tough situations before by agreeing to one thing up front, and then come to find out that's just the first step for something else that the person wants later on, and they use that first step as sort of ammunition. You've already kind of agreed to this, and now you've made me do these things, or you led me to believe I could do these things, and now you can't deny my next step. So
his only option would be if he buys the lot to sell it or use it all as one lot, or he could create two parcels. That's his only two options we have.
Right.
And I'm sure he's going to buy with the idea that he can create the lot and sell the lot to generate income.
I was thinking even about the saving time. I mean, if we were to say, now let's wait until the building's down and then he can come. He can knock the building down in, whatever, a few weeks, and then make sure that he schedules a meeting with the board concurrent with that, and you've got everything ready.
He's
going
to have to come back with a site plan approval for any issuance of any new building permit, too. So the town would get a kick at the can as far as the site plan.
For the new building?
For the village, yes.
Yeah. I'm still a little bit confused as to why we pre-approved this when you could just knock the building down, you've met all the criteria for dividing the lot, and then
it's clean.
I don't know why we're trying to do it in a reverse order. If I'm not sure how much time it saves, I'm not sure why we're doing it this way. Trustee Dart.
I think the reason is the buyer is supposed to be closing on it, and he's afraid that we could change our minds on that, even if you raise the building.
But that's what I was saying. If he's met all the criteria, we have no recourse. We can't change our minds. There's no recourse for denying it.
No, just that 12 feet is the only thing that would deny it right now. As from the Plan Commission's perspective, that was the only issue.
Right.
Now, at that time, they didn't know the building was going to be raised or if it wasn't going to be raised.
Right.
So there was the other thing is you could, change your lot to veer out right where that building was, and then change the lot lines there, and then that would still be acceptable.
But the idea is that the building's going to be raised, and what we're doing is we're contemplating a pre-approval for when the building is raised and everything's all done and you have the map is hunky-dory. I'm just wondering why we're doing it that way. Why don't we just have the building raised and then we have all the criteria met? I mean, I'm not sure exactly why we're doing this. Trustee Zeller.
I agree with your train of thought. But I just want to go back to something that was just said. If the CSM is approved with the building down, the village doesn't get another kick at the cat. The village does not. The village board is not involved with approving residential building plans. So this does not come before us again. This is the CSM is the platting of the lots, but the building itself would go to the building inspector for all the permits and such for that review. Okay, just a question. What is the where is the road access to lot number one?
It's on the right now, there's no access to it. Because I'm familiar with that section there. No. There's no access.
It's supposed
okay,
to be here.
So they turn right on River Lane.
They come out here, turn right on River Lane.
Okay. All right, yep. Thank you.
And I don't know, Steve has been dealing with this client all the time, so I don't know for his comfort levels, whether or not this is a financing issue or something like that, as far as protecting himself down the road or whatever.
What would the financing issue be?
Well, then, if he's borrowing so much money with the idea that he can sell a lot and pay some of it back, I don't know if that's a deal that he's working with his bank or. I don't know if that's even the situation. I'm just kind of thinking why he wants us to know that he can have the ability to buy this.
Is this typically done? I mean, Tracy, you said that based on your discussions with the building inspector and the
when I talked to the surveyor, Steve, the surveyor that's not working, on this, his comment was, well, we do this all the time in other communities. They do it conditionally, it's not a big deal. Because I was planning to not put it on the village board at all and say, once you get the house down, you come back. And then you go through the process, because our process isn't real long. It's supposed to be like mission comes to the village board, and then it's approved. And Brown County has already approved it, and theirs is a 3-year approval. So depending on what goes on when ours comes, it wouldn't impact. It would have to go back to Brown County again. So that was my thoughts initially. Then when I talked to Steve, he's like, you know, the gentleman that purchased it really wants to have some comfort that he can do this in the future. You know, what do you think? Can you do it? And then, you know, Debbie and I kind of kicked it around. What have we done in the past? You know, do we want to go ahead and do this? Is it more of a pain to keep track of it in here? So we kind of went back and forth, and we thought, well, we could keep track of it, and we didn't really have an issue with it. So that's why it's coming before you. So whatever you're more comfortable with, that's your choice. We don't really have a past practice that we look back at and we're able to find that we've done this before. It was just a request from the surveyor for the customer that purchased the lot.
But again, just so that I'm clear, if all the criteria are met for this, and they all seem to be met except for the setback, that if we do it in the regular order and have the building down first, and then we would have no, even if there's a different board and there's different personalities with different opinions, we'd have no recourse of denying dividing this lot.
Correct.
Just to reaffirm that, I've been through CSM land subdivisions in other villages in Wisconsin, and what you said is accurate. The village board, the governing board, cannot subjectively stop a CSM if it meets all of the plat dimensions and is in line with all of the ordinance requirements. So if that building is down, we cannot stand in the way of this in any way. So I would feel better about it with the building down, going back through the normal steps you just spoke of.
Trustee Gant?
I agree with you. I mean, there isn't anything we can do with maybe all the zoning, but I understand somebody that's going to plop down and close on a deal and invest a lot of money wanting some measure of assurance, because all of this board is extremely intelligent. I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, you read court cases all the time, where boards or city councils do interesting things and wind up having a court tell them that you can't do what you just did. So, I mean, we're basically giving assurance on something we have no control over anyway, provided that the condition is satisfied. So, I haven't got a problem giving person assurance that if indeed the house is removed, your CSM will be reported. Even though we don't have any discretion to deny it if it came back the other way. So, I mean, we're not going on any kind of limb here. You know, we're just telling him something that he should already know. You know, but, so I've got a problem giving the assurance. You know, and it could be a financing thing. Who knows? You know, but I mean, if I'm going to stick a lot of money down, I want to know what's going to happen before I stick the money down and not find out after, even though we have no discretion over it.
I can see that. It's like having a list of rules, and the first rule is follow all the rules. You know, of course, right? And so, right, the law, the ordinances are the ordinances, and we can't just willy-nilly decide not to follow them. So I'm just not really understanding, unless there's a financial reason and the lender wants some pre-approval from the board, or I don't know. We don't have any information that that's true. I'm just,
well, as I think through it theoretically, that analysis assumes that the zoning ordinances stay exactly the same. If we change the zoning ordinances, then he may not be able to subdivide. I mean, so there is something we can do to thwart this. I mean, not that we want to, but I mean, theoretically, we could. I mean, you know, a month from now, we could change the zoning ordinances and mess up all the setbacks.
That's true.
So I get it. I think that gives me even more, you know, reason to give this person assurance. Yeah. He wants to know what the playing field looks like.
That's true. And with a change of board, you never know. They might decide the first order of business come April is...
Change all the setbacks
for the zoning ordinances.
But if he builds the house...
Mr. Rafter, I think, is running. I think it's a...
I think he was thinking
so of it. Your concerns are well-founded.
That's a platform. This isn't such a... that point is well taken. This isn't such a far-reaching thought, because you know, many, many, many municipalities require 100-foot minimum water frontage in order to develop anything that is adjoining or attached to water. And this is allowing a 77-foot waterfront lot in the village of Alloway. So I mean, that is. But the process to change that would be multi-month process. So this could be done in the meantime prior to. I don't think the village can hold up any approvals based on the process of rewriting.
Or in the process of rewriting. Further discussion. Do we have a motion and a second on this one? Okay. We're ready for discussion. All right. We'll pick up the rules. I'll entertain a motion. Trustee Gass?
I'll move to conditionally approve the CSM until December 31, 2014, with the requirement that the house be removed before the CSM is signed by the board. If it's not removed, then we're asked to go back through the CSM process.
Trustee Kendrick?
A second.
Like the group. Yes, Trustee Dillon.
Can I make a motion of a friendly amendment to the motion? And I would change the date of removal to June
30th,
2014.
Snow might not be
on the ground
yet.
It is a long winter. I was going to suggest the same thing. Can we push it a little bit farther back in the summer?
July 31st. You have 31 days in July?
Yes.
July 31st.
Okay, I can do that. I'll second that amendment. Discussion on the amendment? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment passes. Discussion on the main motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 12, action regarding the purchase of a used trackless vehicle for the street department. Mr. Burns?
I should go over this before you make a motion so that you have the updated information. We discussed this at Public Works. And the decision at Public Works was to bring it to the board when we had the updated purchase price. And then the board could consider this for a purchase.
This is not in this year's budget. It will probably be in next year's budget to replace our current trackless. Our current trackless does need some significant repairs, so it's 12 years old this year, so this was going to be in next year's budget to replace. What this is all about is Bruce Equipment traded in the trackless and knew that we were nearing the point of replacing our trackless and approached us with this used piece of equipment for our consideration. What the trackless is used for, and this is for our summer mowing. We mow several lots, roadsides, and so forth in the summer. This is used for leaf collection in the fall, raking the leaves out on the street. And it's used for snow plowing sidewalks in the winter as a backup to the other unit. So we have two units, and one unit is primary for snow plowing. This one's primary for mowing and leaves. But we work, the way it's been working out with the amount of snow this winter, we've been using both. And with our leaf collection, we actually used both for leaf collection too this past fall. Anyway, this is a used unit that we have been offered. We did look at it. We test drove it on Friday. It's in very good condition. It is a 2006. It has about one quarter of the miles and the operating hours on it that our current trackless has. So it is a unit in good condition. The price on here was $41,000. If we were to purchase this, we would trade in our current unit. We'll get $5,000 for the trade-in on our current unit. They will give us $1,000 off. There's some minor repairs that need to be done to it. There's a broken tail light. There's a mirror that needs to be fixed. Rather than have the distributor do the repairs, we'll do them ourselves because we can probably do all the repairs for about $200. But they'll give us $1,000 off on that. And it needs an air conditioner. And they'll give us $1,000 for the cost of the air conditioner. So the purchase price of this would be $34,000. Now, the reason why it needs an air conditioner, because I'm sure that's a question you have, the reason it needs an air conditioner is because during the summer it gets pretty hot inside this cab. And it is used for mowing. And when the guys are out mowing, they're usually mowing for a week straight. And they're mowing, you know, fields with weeds and stuff like that. And we can't operate with the windows open. They'll draw all that material inside. So the air conditioner allows them to keep this closed up and keep all of that pollen and weed dust and everything else out of the cab. That's what we do with the current unit. It's air conditioned, and that allows them to work better in the summer. It would cost us $3,750 to have an air conditioner installed by the factory distributor here in Green Bay. If we did it ourselves, we'd save a little bit, but not much, because the cost of the air conditioner is most of the cost. And we kind of not leaning toward doing the installation ourselves, because if we have the factory distributor do it, it's under warranty, and that would make sense. So that means the purchase price of this would be the $34,000 plus $3,750, so that would be $37,750. Which is a good price for a unit like this. We'll probably get 7 to 8 years out of this, and maybe longer, considering, you know, that it's used for, it's not run every day, so it's part-time duty. It does represent a savings, because if we can get 7 to 8 years out of it, and we buy it for $38,000, basically, a new unit is $100,000 or more, you know, that's a good deal for us from the standpoint of saving money. So that's why this was brought forward. It's an opportunity for us, I think, to save some money if you are so inclined to advance the purchase of this, and then that would not be in the budget for next year.
I suppose these don't show up on Craigslist every week either.
They do not. And the ones that we looked at in research, they were close to this dollar amount, and they were nowhere near this condition. So this is a good unit in good condition. You don't often find these.
Trustee Zeller?
Craig, what is the usage in the summertime? Is it mowing, did you say?
Yeah, you know, there's some lots that we mow, the tall grass. All the tall grass mowing is done by this unit.
This isn't a park. This isn't a park department mowing unit.
No. No, this is the mowing that the street department does.
So we can't use the park department's equipment for mowing?
Well, gather because we use it for leaf collection in the fall. This is the primary unit for raking leaves onto the street. And then we also put the plow on this one, and so when we snow plow sidewalks in the winter, we blow, and then we come back with this sidewalk plow and plow after that. So, and sometimes we use both of them at the same time. So we can't get by with one if that was, you know.
There's interchangeability of the components, of the use components then.
Yep. Everything that we have right now, the attachments, we would keep. We're not buying any attachments. Everything will fit right on this. And we can't use the other unit for mowing because we don't have a mower for the other unit. And that's our strategy. One is dedicated primary to snow plowing, one is dedicated primary to mowing, but then they back each other up.
Okay. Could Parks use this? You know, is this...
Yeah.
The availability,
oh, yeah.
It seems like it would be available.
Yeah, this is for the heavy-duty mowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got really tall grass, brush, that kind of stuff. This will handle that. It's a flail mower, so it'll take care of all that kind of stuff.
Would you get some utility out of that, Brad? Is this...
We have used it when even when one of our mowers is down. So it has been out. But it is generally used for something that's not a soccer field, baseball field.
Not like
picnic areas, no.
Your flat, no. Open spaces.
No, it's not a finish mower.
Mm-hmm. Craig, are we using this for trail grooming? That was a different piece of equipment that we already decided on because we were driving something backwards. Yeah. Okay.
Just one follow-up question. So this, we need to come up with the money for this. There's nothing budgeted for this. So.
No, it's not budgeted. It would come out of the equipment fund.
Okay. And when Public Works took this item up, it was prior to Craig and staff being able to see it, run it, test it.
Okay.
So we left it open for comment once they had some experience with it.
So Craig, there's some things that need to be fixed, and you've articulated the cost savings, but obviously when you buy used cars, I always buy used cars.
Sure.
You pay for the maintenance, right? Because
yep.
Stuff's going to break down that's not broken down right now, and that's sort of we have Bob or someone on staff who can take care of what needs to be taken care of for this piece of equipment.
And Bob actually went down and inspected it.
Okay.
The main bearings. It's an articulated vehicle. You check the bearings, check the engine, and those kinds of things, and basically said it's in very good condition. The repairs that need to be done are all minor things.
But if things go wrong with it in the future, bearings go bad on it, Bob is in a position that he knows enough about this kind of equipment to be able to take care of it.
The trackless that we have, we've already replaced the articulated bearings and so forth at least once. We might have done it twice in the world, and we did that in-house.
Okay.
We don't do the diesel engine, though. We don't overhaul engines.
Right. Trustee Gant?
Yeah, just one question for Craig. It may negatively impact the trade-in. Can we steal the air conditioner off the trade-in? And
it's not working very well. I asked about that, and it's not working very well, so they don't really want to do that.
Well, I mean, and just as a general comment, and this is something we've been talking about for quite a few years in terms of always buying new ones. You know, we've all said we all buy used cars, how come we're not looking more into the used equipment? So I think this is a very good introduction into that venue and buying used. I mean, the savings seem readily apparent to me. So with that, I'll make a motion that we authorize Craig to purchase the... We don't have a motion, right?
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to authorize Craig to purchase the 2006 used trackless for the sum of $37,750 to be taken out of the equipment replacement fund.
Is there a second? Trustee Green, second.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 13, Action regarding the approval of the MS4 annual stormwater report to the DNR. Is there a motion with regard to this item?
I move to approve as presented.
Is there a second? Trustee Green seconds. Discussion? Craig, anything you want to highlight? Any questions from the board?
It's just a very brief summary on the cover sheet. And basically, Heritage Hill is constructed. This summer, we'll be doing the prairie plantings. If you want us and Huffman are complete, we're closing them out right now. They'll be done. Our street sweeping program is completely in place. Signs, stickers on the garbage cans, the schedule, operation, everything is complete. And as of last summer, we're fully implemented. That's been approved by the DNR, and the grant is being closed out. We should have the money on that fairly soon. Riverside Drive, what's coming up is Riverside Drive Stormwater. We'll be meeting with Mead and Hunt the end of this month to start talking about stormwater treatment that they'll provide as part of that project. Obviously, the work on Riverside Drive is going to consume quite a bit of our time the rest of this year, not only stormwater, but the other things that are going on there. And item 5, our public education outreach program, we need to boost that up a bit. We haven't had a chance to really look at it. We talked about it at Public Works. We are going to look for some assistance in that regard, but that's something we need to do this year, is kind of strengthen that part of the program a little bit. Nothing other major than that. There is some things we will be looking at in the listing here, but we will do a little bit of an overview, a 5-year to 8-year plan, 2-page, 3-page summary that we've used in the past, so that you can kind of see the condensed version of where we want to be in 5 to 10 years. And that we will do ourselves. But that's basically where we're at. This is the annual report we have to submit, and that's what you have to do.
We ask this every time we talk about stormwater, so bear with me. We're ahead of the game on this relative to other municipalities. We all know that. Any wiggle room or anything at the DNR that would suggest they're going to be adding, not criteria, but adding ways to get points towards your stormwater management for things that they don't include now. Trustee Green has talked about trees and natural barriers. And then secondly, where are we with the phosphorus? We've focused so long on suspended solids, and phosphorus, from what I hear, is going to be even worse in terms of its effects and impacts on municipalities.
That's why we're going to look at the look forward 5 to 10 years in layman's terms and in my terms. I'll extract it out and prepare a little summary like we had in the past based on our stormwater plan and what's changing in the regulations. What I think is going to come out of it, the TMDL for the Fox River has been approved. It is being implemented. Our discharge permit is in draft form. It does include meeting the TMDL, but it's going to be stepped over 3 permits, 15 years. But I haven't been able to access the details in our permit yet. But if we, as part of Riverside Drive, can construct, and the DOT construct stormwater treatment as part of Riverside Drive and include some of our tributary areas, I think we're going to be pretty close to meeting the Fox River TMDL. So that's why I want to look at that in a little more detail. I think we're going to be pretty close to meeting the Fox River TMDL. But on East River, there will be some requirements. But, you know, that's going to be 5 to 10 years out. But there will be some requirements on the East River that we'll have to comply with. So there may need to be a stormwater treatment pond on the East River to meet the long term. What's happening on the regulatory standpoint, in fact, I was at the conference today, and I'll be back there tomorrow, the stormwater conference, and there's quite a few DNR people speaking about what's happening with regulations. Right now, there's a Senate and House bill that's going through for approval that is going to extend the time period that we will have for the adaptive management program. And we're part of the Green Bay Met program to try to purchase credits and delay implementation of phosphorus rules. So that's something we're going to have to look at, both ourselves and as part of Green Bay Met, that we may be able to defer some phosphorus requirements for a longer time period. But the DNR, but that Senate and Assembly, or the, yeah, the well, the house, whatever it is. The two agencies.
Two branches of government.
They're going to extend it from 15 to 20 years. Right now it's a 15-year program. They're looking at extending it to 20 to give us 5 more years for the adaptive management program. That's where you're trading some cost basically to farmland and other agencies that are willing to do some things, and then it buys us some credits. So that's part of this, what we're going to look at for the path forward. So they are extending out the deadline a little bit.
And what's been the tone of the conversations? I mean, I think the elephant in the room is the farmland, and everyone loves the farmer, but they're dumping a lot of stuff into the rivers that impact phosphorus. And has anyone sort of had the political will to call it like they see it?
Two things that I've heard today.
Tracy's nodding, shaking your head now.
There's two things that I heard today that are positive, but they're not regulatory, okay? They're not enforcement type things. One is the NRCS has budgeted a huge amount of money for the lower Fox River, for the farmers, for erosion control, and best management practices on farmland. Mm-hmm. And that's a positive thing. They brought the NRCS in, that's the Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources, Conservation Service, because they work with the farmers all the time. And so they're focusing on that agency to work with the farmers. I don't know the exact dollar number, but I know that it's a lot of money. So that's one thing. The other one is they're establishing a farmers' council. And they've got some farms that are willing to work with the local agencies on adaptive management. And what they're doing is they've done this in southern Wisconsin. I heard this story this morning, so it was pretty interesting. They have some farmers down in the Rock River Basin and so forth that are leading the consortium of farmers to implement best management practices. And they're providing some financial incentives for them to do that. And it is interesting because some of these farms they're as sophisticated or more than most municipalities in terms of managing their nutrients. They really are doing a good job. They're implementing that here to get some farmers involved, and they're hoping that that will bring more into it. And one of the positives, again, it was discussed today at the conference, the Oneida Tribe presented their plan. They're taking the whole Silver Creek watershed, the whole thing, and implementing best practice. And that's going to be the model for the whole Northeast Wisconsin for how much can we accomplish. And the agencies are putting money in to help support it. So there's some positive things. I think those things will help.
Thank you. Trustee Green?
Just a question. I'm always harping on what residents can do, and I know we've got some rain gardens, and we've got some people operating some pretty significant rain barrel operations, and I was amazed last summer at how many people actually came to visit us regarding rain barrels, because they said with the water bills going up, people are now paying attention to not putting municipal water on their lawns. Is there any talk about them recognizing community efforts and what the residents are able to do with their stormwater runoff and taking that into consideration?
Yes, there is. And one of our challenges is to be able to dedicate some time to that. And we quite frankly don't have enough manpower available that we could develop a program. But there are some credits available for the small biofilters and other things. So that is coming forward as something that we can start looking at as a credit.
Good, because I'm starting to see more and more interest. I hate that it's because water bills are high, but people are very interested in how do they capture rainwater so they're not putting municipal water down.
There's a lot
down.
Of discussion about that. And then also that we should be looking at part of any of our projects, how we can incorporate more biofilters and other things of that sort into it, because we can take credit for those now.
Good.
On our road construction and other things. So, yes, we do need to start. It's now moving down to the smaller things. So that's something we need to start factoring in.
Is that going to be factored in on Hoffman and Riverside?
Those are in Riverside. Well, yes,
okay.
Riverside. Well, definitely, and that's part of the discussion with the design engineer and the DOT. We want some small treatment systems in all of those places where that can be done, so that we, even if it costs us some money to share in the cost based on the hydraulic capacity, now's the time to do it. It'll be much more economical for us, and then River will be done. You know, we'll have that taken care of. But on Huffman, Huffman's already treated by one of our ponds. So in that area, we basically captured most everything. So there isn't much we can do on Huffman. However, we are getting a credit back from Brown County for the cost of the pond construction. So there's a plus for us on that. It is reducing the capital cost of the project itself.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any further discussion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 14, action regarding the changes to the personnel manual. Is there a motion with regard to this item? I just saw it now. I didn't see it before. No. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
I'd move to approve with one note, and Tracy and I have already talked about this. We've cleaned up the language in a lot of our other sections regarding physician, changing it to healthcare provider, just so it's all-inclusive. But the return-to-work policy had been in a different manual versus the personnel manual, so we hadn't addressed that. So just clean up the language in that, but move to approve.
Actually, you know what? I think I'll can you hold that motion, Trustee Green, and I'll sort of collect some recommendations that people have for edits, and then we'll make it all motion. Yes, do you have another, Trustee Green?
I do. Village employees are not required to reside in the village per Wisconsin Act 20. However, if Act 20, anything ever happens to it, and we can put that genie back in the bottle. So, Randy, your lawyerly ways, wondering if we can't put a line in there that at least has the intention of, if Act 20 is repealed, village administrator and department heads go back to residing within the village, would be the intention.
I had just a question about, very small, about attire. What page it would be. It's under dress code 4.3, about three pages in. Management staff, including et cetera, are to be dressed in business casual attire Monday through Friday. I'm assuming it could be business or business casual, right? And then Fridays are considered casual days, and employees may dress accordingly if they wish. Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's fine. Yeah.
I just have one correction on the very second to the last page under Sickleave Donation. This came up at our clerical meeting this morning. Very first sentence, in the event an employee utilizes all of their earned sick his or her leave bank. So we just want to make sure it's something they've earned and they're using it. We don't want them to use it if they have not earned it yet. And then all of a sudden they end up going out on a sick leave for an extended period and they owe back some money to the village because they've never earned that sick leave. So it's a kind of a safety net for the village that someone doesn't use it all and then we have to try to get that money back from them because they've used sick leave or the banks that they do not have. So just to add their earned rather than just leave it without.
Brad, Craig, and Tracy, the staff has been very involved in all of these personnel changes, and I'm assuming that they've seen not only the modifications as we've gone along, but in this final document, and there have been no inconsistencies from what they expected all along. Is that correct?
Yeah, everyone, Craig and Brad have gone through with their employees. We met this morning with the clerical unit, Debbie and Claire and I did, and no other issues come up except for the one that I just mentioned about the leave.
So I think everyone's okay with it. And what I plan to do is have maybe a couple meetings next week, go through this again with everybody, and then a couple other personnel type things that we just need to revisit with people.
Okay. Trustee Gass?
I've got the language for section 2.4.
Hold off just one second on that, could you? Unless there are objections, I'll entertain if there's someone who wants to speak with regard to the issue of visitor. We'll suspend the rules. Yes, sir?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. With regards to the organizational chart in the manual, it was discussed on August 6th of 2013. There's no chart in here for where the committees report to or where the public fits into the Village of Alloway organizational chart. So at some point, committees could be included in the organizational chart so people know how to respond. And that's not pertinent to exactly what's tonight, but it was on. It's in the manual. Thank you.
Thank you. I thought we covered that at one point. Or was that summer help or there was
no? I don't believe we ever really discussed the committees at all incorporating with the org plan or org chart that okay. I remember. It was seasonal employees.
It was the seasonal okay.
that we discussed. So
I remember there were a group of maybe it was the crossing guards and the seasonal employees that I was thinking we were trying
those
to figure out.
Those are all employees. This is a personnel
right,
manual.
Right.
You know, and maybe with maybe there's a better place to put
the committees.
Yeah.
If there's not employees.
Work charts. They're not employees, but they certainly have some.
They're part of the organization.
Right. They're part of the organization as a whole, and maybe there's a different place to put that. Even in our policy manual that we're putting together that has certain. Other aspects that aren't necessarily personnel related, maybe that would be a good spot to put that in.
Yeah. On the other hand, I understand, I remember working on this 6 months ago with you, and it's getting kind of crowded as an organizational chart, but in my mind, if you can, if you're as small as we are, if you can have one organizational chart so you don't have different charts for different, depending on whether you're talking about committees, it would be better. If we can't manage to fit it all on one chart, maybe just a footnote on this chart saying that committee structure or is contained in a different part of the. Any other comments? Okay, we'll take up the rules, please. Trustee Gast.
Okay, I would propose that section 2.4 residency restrictions be modified to read as follows. Village employees are not required to reside in the Village of Alloway, comma, except as permitted or allowed by Wisconsin law as deemed appropriate by the Village Board. Then a second sentence which would read, the Village Board reserves the right to change or alter this policy in the event that Wisconsin law concerning residency restrictions is changed, comma, altered, or abolished. Period. I'll send you that tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. I want to discuss that verbiage a little bit. My interpretation of Trustee Green's comment was that it would almost default if the law went away, that the rule would go away. I would assume we reserve the right to change the policy anytime we want, as long as it's consistent with the law, right?
Yeah.
So what you said to me is true for everything in the personnel manual. We reserve the right to change things whenever we see fit. So I would like verbiage in there that says, if this law ever goes away, the default is the rule goes away rather than.
Well, I think I'd leave it as it is. If the law ever goes away, we can change the policy if the board wants to.
But then I don't think that's not adding verbiage at all, because of course we can change the policy if the law goes away.
Yeah, I don't think we necessarily need that second sentence, because if the law goes away, we can revisit the policy, and then modify it as appropriate. And I think there's a savings clause, as I recall looking at the larger personnel manual, that the board has the right to change the policies anytime or for any reason that they want to.
Right.
So I don't think we need the second sentence. I do like that they have to be that they're not required to be Village Valley residents. I like the part about except as permitted or allowed, because there are a couple of exceptions to it. Mm-hmm. You know, public safety exceptions to the residency requirement.
Right.
So I think that should be in there, because you know, that reserves to us the right to say, well, you've got to be because you fall within the public safety restriction.
Right.
So, I'm very comfortable taking the second one out, because if the law goes away, we can change the policy.
Right. Okay. Trustee Green, was that your intention?
I'm
it sounded
that.
Like okay. It sounded like what you wanted was, if it goes away, the default in our policy is then this policy automatically goes away, that you do have to live in
correct.
The village. And if we wanted that change, the board would have to change that. But the way we're doing it now, if the law goes away, the board's going to have to reconvene and make the decision to require it.
So.
All right.
So you're leaving it as it is in yellow?
No.
With Randy's...
With exception... as permitted or allowed.
Yes.
Okay.
Public safety.
We can give that to the specific order.
Yeah, I'll email it.
Okay.
Does everyone understand the proposed verbiage? All right, any other recommended changes?
You can see the wheels turning, can't you? The more I think about it, I kind of like the default. If Act 20 goes away, this one's null and void, administrators and department heads are back in the village.
That's what I thought you wanted.
And then,
yeah.
Then we revisit the debate within the board about residency restrictions, because that wasn't a unanimous concept. And secondly, I don't know how effectual it is, because it somewhat binds a future board.
Right.
We can then come in there and change it anyway. Right. You know, my preference is just to leave it to the future board, if that law ever goes away, to figure out what they want to do with it. Because I think, as we said, the default is that these people do then have to live in the village, and the next board come along and say, we don't like that rule anyway, we're going to change it, because you can change any policy.
Right. But I guess it sends a statement, and
it
makes the default something that at least Trustee Green seems to think is the way she wants it.
We all know how I feel about residency. I firmly believe department heads and administrators should reside within the village, because they are the ones who have fundamental control over budgets. And
And I agree, but this ain't going away anytime soon. So
here's to hoping.
You know what? We can have this discussion again a year from now, if we want the default to be that they have to live in the village. If the
here's to hoping the residency piece goes away.
Right. All right, so the Trustee Gasson is going to go with his original, just the change to the one sentence in there. Any other recommendations or suggestions for edits to what was submitted? Ms. Bain, could you summarize what the changes were? You had the
under return to work, change to healthcare provider.
Mm-hmm.
Under attire, to add business or business casual attire Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the change to the residency, those three.
And added the word earned.
Oh, and added the word earned under 6.3. Under sick leave.
And then the change to the residency. Okay. Anything further, Trustee Zeller?
Did I miss, was there going to be just a global change of the word physician to healthcare provider throughout the entire document?
Yes.
Okay, I just, I'm hesitant about that. So let's go to the return to work portion. And maybe I'm worrying about this too much, but there was a statement in there that, did I see that now? The physician. Okay, so in the highlighted portion above 4.3 under dress code, any work within the limitations set by physician for moving and lifting. So if that is replaced by healthcare provider, then are we allowing some decisions to be made that are not being controlled or reviewed by a physician?
Yes, because by license, other healthcare providers can make those, nurse practitioners, physician assistants specifically.
Do we need to spell that out anywhere in the definition of a healthcare provider, or is that pretty standard?
What about
a mental health care provider?
They can write return to work restrictions as well. So, I mean, that's why most of the language in cleanup statutes is going now to appropriately license healthcare provider terminology, because...
That's a little bit different. Then, in Trustee Zeller's example, any work within the limitations set by, if it's a mental health care provider for moving and lifting? That's kind of the wrong kind of healthcare provider to be making that determination, right?
Correct, but they can make that determination.
Oh.
It, according to their license, they, depending on what their license is, and here's where you get, when you start listing licensing classes versus appropriately licensed healthcare provider, they change the state statute, and then you wind up having to change this. Okay. So, yeah, even OSHA has gone now to, you know, licensed healthcare provider language.
Okay. So, I mean, I can see the wisdom in this. You don't want to have a physician for...
It runs up costs for the
everything,
village.
Everything, it runs up costs, right. But
because
also,
if somebody's seen...
I don't want a note from a psychiatrist saying that their back is...
A psychiatrist is a physician. They can write anything they want.
Or a psychologist. This person can lift what they're supposed to... Or they can't lift what they're supposed to lift for their job. I mean, it's the wrong kind of healthcare provider.
We can cinch it down to MDDO NPPA at this time, and that would cover your major classes, because people seen in urgent care, primary care, actually even any specialty offices at this point.
We have a dentist here.
And dentists, right, return to work too, because somebody who's out with oral surgery can't necessarily come back to work. And, I mean, so that's why leaving it as healthcare provider gets you a little wider coverage, because, I mean, I can see where a dentist will write for no lifting. Somebody has major oral surgery and you don't want head down and you don't want their blood pressure going up. So I don't know that you want to cut that. So that's just, yeah.
It works for other municipalities, right? It seems to be that we're not just municipalities, but other organizations. It seems to be the terminology that people are using.
Healthcare provider language, yes. It is much more inclusive, and then you don't run into these situations where it's costing the municipality more money. I believe the last one really to change that was a stickler was the United States Postal Service, of all things. So, and yeah.
See, now I'm talking to psychologists and not dentists. Unless there are objections, let's suspend the rules for a minute. And sir, please.
Explicitly. No, I think Steve Sevenick, 2394 Riverside Drive, as a practicing dentist, under state law, in terms of prescription and for insurance purposes, we are equal to a physician. That's how state law looks at it. Yep. So a licensed healthcare provider may be your best bet, or you may be revisiting this, you may be challenged.
Right, that's why we've changed it from physician to my proposal is healthcare provider language. I'm a nurse practitioner by trade. So.
Right, there you go. And with the way Obamacare is going
and
healthcare per se, you're going to see more nurse practitioners and physicians,
assistants
writing and making these determinations.
Exactly.
So you can save yourself some trouble.
Thank you for the support. It always bugged me that dentists, they leave them out. Psychologists and...
Well, that's a different...
You know...
Thank you.
Licensed healthcare? Or just healthcare?
Appropriately licensed.
Yeah, we can say appropriately licensed healthcare provider, because that would cover...
I'm a little more comfortable.
Yeah, that would cover... anybody that's licensed by state statute, and if their state statute changes, you know, then we're covered with what their state statute covers.
Okay, thank you. We'll take up the rules. Any further discussion? Trustee Gass?
I've been thinking about, with respect to the...
You're supposed to be paying attention to the issue at hand, Trustee Gass.
I can work on it.
Or attorney.
I was thinking about this before, and when Paul raised a question that brought another question to mind. It's in the modified work schedule, right above, they're not page numbers here, but you'll see a capitalized return to work activities.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a number of conditions, there's four of them,
mm-hmm.
you know, for these modified work assignments. And if you look at the existing number four, it talks about modified work assignments are temporary. The assignment will be reviewed on a schedule set by the healthcare provider, with an anticipated date for return to unrestricted regular duties. I mean, I don't want it to be, you know, left, you know, strictly up to the, you know, healthcare provider and or the employee. I think the village has to have some say in here, because, you know, the employee or the healthcare provider might say, well, sure, they can return to unrestricted duties in a year and a half. You know, although I think there's other places in here we can protect ourselves. But I was just thinking of adding a subparagraph 5 there that just says, the village shall have the right to make all final decisions of and concerning the nature and extent of any modified work assignment, considering the reasonable needs and expectations of the village and the employee's ability to fulfill the substantial duties of his or her position. But I just want to make it clear that we're not only going to look to the doctor, we've got to look to the needs of the village, too. You know, because, yeah, they come back in a year and a half and take care of their old job, well, that might not meet our needs. I think we need to work with the health care providers and then assess the needs of the village and figure out what's reasonable in that context. So I would suggest adding that paragraph in there. There is some language earlier about modified work schedules or have to be worked through with the department heads, you know, but I think we should have a statement in there someplace that, you know, we have to balance in the needs of the village as well.
Do you want to put a piece in there about FMLA jurisdiction too? Because FMLA is only 12 weeks. So, I mean, that's when they wrote, and I've never heard of it before, but somebody could spin a scenario where they say they can come back in a year and a half. You know, they're so far out of FMLA coverage by then.
Well, right, that's why I want to add this in there, because what we're suggesting, I think, is, I mean, clearly we can't do anything while somebody's out on an approved family medical leave for the statutory period of time. I mean, they have a right to come back.
Right.
You know, but that presupposes that they have the right to come back in a capacity where they can fulfill the substantial duties of their job. I mean, you don't have to, you know, there are some exceptions, but for the most part, you don't have to modify their job or modify their schedule or give them an alternative job to do. There are some exceptions, but it's not that clear cut. But the standard rule is if they can't come back after 12 weeks of FMLA and fulfill the substantial duties of their job, they don't have a job, or you don't have to let them have a job. And what we're proposing is here is that we'll work on some kind of a modified work schedule, which I think is appropriate and reasonable, but I think there needs to be a provision in there that the village has an interest too, and we'll counterbalance all of those things and try to figure out what works. So that's where that proposed sub-5 came in.
Well, and the only reason I worry about even mentioning FMLA there is, you know, at least in my mind, I hadn't fathomed somebody being out that long with just an open-ended whatever, but do we need something in there referring to, you know, federal and state statutes for FMLA?
I mean, in terms of compliance with those?
Right, because what I don't want somebody to do is read this and say, oh, well, we'll work something out, and if it's not necessarily by the federal or state rules, you see where I'm headed with that?
I mean, I don't think we have to have a provision in here that says we'll comply with FMLA. I mean, that's a given.
Not comply, but just keep in mind FMLA. Because what I don't want people to do is read this and think they're operating under, you know, some other set of guidelines besides the federal ones.
But at least this section is talking about, you know, once they've returned to work,
mm-hmm.
you know, presumably after, you know, after their FMLA has expired. So I think I just want some language in there that says when you're back at work. I mean clearly if you're going to be gone for 16 weeks, which is beyond the FMLA period, the employer would have the right to say, well, if you're not back on 12 weeks and 1 day, I mean, we can terminate your employment because we don't have to hold it open any longer than the FMLA reporting period.
Right, but you just mentioned a year and a half before, so
I
guess that's where I'm getting
it.
Okay.
But
Got it.
When I was looking at it in the context of the modified work assignment.
Okay.
That assumes they're back at work, but I think what this is talking about is that sub 4, which was what caught my attention. It says modified work assignments are temporary. The assignment will be reviewed on a schedule set by the health care provider. That's what raised the question in my mind. It's not only the health care provider. That's why I wanted to sub 5.
It's everybody at the table.
The village has to be at the table, too. And we got to look at, you know, your health care provider might say, you need to be on this modified work schedule for a year and a half. The village might say, well, that's not going to work for me. I mean,
right.
Instead of 3 weeks, that would work for us, and we can deal with that. But a year and a half is too long to be on that modified work schedule.
Well, then under that one, do we need to mention ADA, reasonable accommodation?
I think that's
okay.
That's a given too.
All right.
I mean, because reasonable accommodation is a bit different. That's assuming they're still in their prior position and they're able to perform the substantial duties of their job in their prior position, but they need some reasonable accommodation to do that. And this modified work schedule is talking about a change in the substantial duties of their position, and we need to be able to weigh in on that.
Brent, is it covered under, on the previous, or I guess two pages, the very first page when we're talking about this, under assignment, the employee's placement in a modified work assignment shall be at the discretion of the department head with the approval of the village administrator? That's village input right there.
And I agree, and that was there, but then I just didn't like 4, where it kind of said it's going to be on a schedule set by the healthcare provider. That's why I wanted some pushback on 5 to say, well, we're going to consider our needs as well. But yeah, there is kind of that catch-all earlier on.
I have no problem with adding it in 5. All right, so Randy, you'd like to propose the wording that you articulated before for as number 5, or do you want to include it in number 4? As it would be, from what I heard you saying, it's sort of going to be a kind of a collaborative decision between the physician, the needs of the village,
It could be in 4. Yeah, then I would just say the village, however, shall have the right.
I kind of like it better there. It makes it seem more in the spirit of.
Well, that's really where
I was
trying to get at.
Right.
You know, was that paragraph 4?
Right.
So, okay, I'll build it as a paragraph.
All right, anything else? You have all those proposed changes?
I hope so.
And get the specific word. Does everyone understand the proposed changes? I think there are 5 of them now. We don't have a motion in the second. Is there someone who would like to make a motion with regard to the handful of changes that we come up with? Trustee Green.
Move to approve with changes discussed here.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart seconds. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks to all of you for your work on this. Item 15, the consent agenda. I'll entertain a motion with regard to items 15 A and B. Is there a motion with regard to these items?
I have a request. Can we split out the Historic Preservation Committee minutes?
We can.
Because they are in dispute.
Sure. Or you could make a motion with a caveat with regard to any changes there.
I'll move to approve with the exemption of the Historic Preservation Committee.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconds. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Item 15A3. You want to have a discussion on this first before I entertain a motion? Trustee Green?
Could somebody who is at this meeting Who's taking minutes? Debbie or Tracy or? Okay.
Okay. What's your question?
The pieces that.
Okay.
Are not expanded on. Like.
You want to know.
I wasn't
not
there.
In the minutes?
Right. Because I know we've got Jim saying there was a piece left out by the story.
We do not put a detailed description on any of our minutes.
Okay.
They're a recap of what happened, and that is what's in the minutes that you have in front of you.
Is the recap.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, it's the minutes.
Do you want to tell the story about what actually happened with the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. What happened was... I did the minutes, and because there's so much controversy going on, I gave Tracy a copy of my draft ones.
Okay.
And we keep those just, I don't normally keep them, but I kept them because of everything going on. And when I redid them in my short format, unfortunately when I sent them out, I sent the first ones out as the draft. So those were never approved by the committee or by you.
Okay.
So every organization that I've ever belonged to, this has been a tension point as to what the minutes are. And minutes are supposed to be for when you make actual decisions.
Right.
The summary of the decision. I always like the minutes to be a little bit more detailed because I forget what the discussion is. So if we discuss something and we make a decision and it comes up again, like the trailer ordinance, right? Six months later, I've forgotten what the discussion was like, and I can go back to the minutes. However, you can't have minutes that are a transcript. And Debbie's strategy has always been she likes to take relatively detailed notes, especially if it's an important topic that she wants to make sure to get right. But then when she puts out the minutes are not going to be the full working notes that she took, right? Those are her notes to remember so she doesn't have to go back to the audio transcript. Listen to the whole thing again to put together the minutes. So there's a level of detail in the minutes. It's very consistent throughout the village board meetings and throughout the committee meetings. And that's the level of detail that was submitted. The problem is the notes, the working notes, were submitted as the minutes by mistake. So there's nothing being hidden here. My suggestion is that
they weren't even complete sentences. It's embarrassing.
The last thing you want to do is put up
Good thing I didn't have anything bad.
So nothing's being hidden here. What I suggest that we do is on all of our minutes that we put a note saying that a full transcript, if you will, or a recording of this meeting can be found on our website so that people know this is a summary of the highlights. And if you want, we have a real advantage of computer storage is cheap, right? We've digitized a long time ago, and so we don't have to put excruciating level of detail in our minutes because we have access to the audio recordings. I don't want to use Debbie's time to be spent taking really detailed minutes and then having to go through them and check them for grammar and put them. I don't think that's a good use of her time, especially given the amount of work that she has at the village. So I'm very comfortable with the minutes, the way that they were, and we'll get to you, sir, that the way that they were submitted in their final form. There's nothing in there that was a secret. It's all an open public meeting, and there's an audio recording of it. So
and I don't
the
want
part
to
about Trustee or Tracy and I, or Trustee Dart and I not being there, I didn't catch that. That should definitely be cleared up. We were there, and that should be recorded in the minutes. I'm sorry, Ms. Bain.
I just don't want to interpret what somebody is thinking. The way they say it, I may interpret it different than what they actually mean. So that is not supposed to be in the minutes.
Trustee Guest.
No, I agree with your comments. I mean, if they're meant to be summaries and the highlights, and in particular, particularly where there's a motion or action taken, that needs to be accurately described. Otherwise, they're bullet point summaries. We do have a digitalized record, you know, for if somebody's interested in a complete rendition of everything that was said. I mean, I feel bad for Debbie. You know, some of our meetings were for 4 or 5 hours, or she had to, you know, summarize, you know, all the discussion that it gets in. So I think minutes serve a very valuable function. And, you know, I think also in terms of our authority in this. I mean, we aren't really approving their minutes. I mean, we're accepting them to be placed on file, essentially, because I don't think this board, you know, has any authority to not accept or accept, you know, anybody else's minutes. I mean, they're their minutes. And if they approved them and said these were the minutes, these are the appropriate minutes of our meeting without modification or change, I mean, who are we to say we can't do that because most of us weren't even there?
They went back through committee because they hadn't approved them the last time, right?
Yeah. But they have been.
Okay. And I think that, you know, any citizen or resident that takes issue with any formally adopted minutes has, you know, the right and capacity to submit correspondence to that committee and say, look, you know, I think I want to highlight this, or I want to make sure that there's a record of this issue I think that was overlooked, or whatever. Then they have the right to do that, and that'll be, you know, part of the official record of that committee or this board. I mean, we get those letters every once in a while, and they should be part of the record.
But I don't think the committee has to go back and change the minutes. It's all recorded. So what one person chooses to highlight might not be exactly what the next person chooses to highlight, but we have a full transcript of all of these open meetings in audio form. Okay, unless there are objections, I'm going to open it up. Sir?
Thank you very much. I'm Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the guy who objected. The issue that we have here is the minutes were submitted to you immediately after the meeting, and then they have to go down to the state. They become official records of the state, and then the National Park Service gets to review those minutes. So these minutes are very important, especially with regards to federal funding of our future studies. And specifically, there was one item in there. The state does not pay for any training of our board, and they did send this gentleman up on two separate occasions. And during the question and answer period, I wanted to make sure that I asked relevant questions so that future board members, committee members, would understand the way that they're supposed to regulate historic districts. Our committee doesn't have any training at all in this. And so I've studied it quite a bit, and so I asked relevant questions, and bullet points would be the right way to address those. Specifically, there was one troubling item that came up and made the speaker very upset, and it's actually going to lead to probably the resignation of our chairman, because it wasn't clear to her that our committee can force people to become historic properties without their consent. So I was assured by everybody that that's not the case, but according to the village, to the State Historical Society and their website, and what I'd like to do is submit this to you. This is straight off of the state website, and this is an official summary of what their rules are, is... it says, commissions sometimes adopt an informal policy not supported by their enabling ordinance that allows an owner permission, that an owner's permission must be granted to designate a property. And Barb said that if that's the case, she didn't want to be the chairman of that anymore. And I told her on Wednesday that that is the case because I have it right here, and I'm sure that she's going to resign. And other people are going to blame me for having her resign, but I'm very persistent, but I'm accurate. And so what I'd like to do is submit this to the village board just so that everybody knows this document is the document that that the state is saying that you have to enforce the law, otherwise we're going to pull your funding. Okay, so I can just hand this to Debbie.
Thank
but
you.
That's, you know, that.
What record would you like this?
That should be, well, that should be
right
the minutes, and I understand that the minutes can be adjusted and that I can submit, you know, the written correspondence, and I appreciate that. But the original minutes that went before the board were completely different than the minutes that the committee got 2 weeks later. So I can live with the fact that the minutes were reported and that I disagree with them, and that I have the right to go ahead and submit a written clarification. And if I wanted to go ahead and do bullet points on the meeting, I'm more than welcome to do that, and the committee can decide what they want to do with it. But I think that it's very important that the committee was not aware that that they're required to enforce the regulations, historic regulations on people, even if they don't want it. So that Barb Copperwood, who's our chairman, was very surprised when I told her that. And that's straight from the horse's mouth.
To me, this is a training issue, though, that the committee didn't know something that you think that they needed to know. What we're talking about now is the consent agenda and the minutes.
Well, we're talking about this specific minutes on the Historic Society.
Right, but you want this document that you handed to Debbie incorporated somehow into the minutes? I mean, I'm not making a connection.
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll have to write a letter to that effect.
And attach this to it.
But that was what my objection was, is when the person from the State Historic Preservation Office, when I asked him repeatedly about the ability to opt out of historic designation, that's kind of what tripped his trigger, and he got very upset. And actually, at the end of the night, he started swearing at me. So it was very bad. So I was kind of upset with that. But
okay, if you could submit a letter with this attached saying that this is important to the minutes of that meeting, that would, I think,
I'll make it clear. But thank you. I just wanted to go on the record that this is the item of controversy, is the ability to opt out of historic designation.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I keep that?
Sure, I think so.
I thought he submitted
it. He's going to submit it with a letter.
Oh, okay.
Describing what he wants done with it.
Okay.
Okay, so we have up for a motion, item 15A3, acceptance, not approval, the acceptance and the placing on file of the Economic Development Committee minutes dated the 7th of February.
Historic preservation.
What did I say?
Economic development.
Yep. I got the wrong one.
Number 5.
Number 5. I am under the wrong thing. 15A5.
Move to place on file.
Trustee Dart, second. Discussion?
Trustee Zeller.
If we are considering making a revision to the minutes, couldn't we just allow this to roll to the next meeting or a successive meeting?
I don't think we're considering any revision. We're placing their approved minutes on file. And Jim has some things he wants to say. He's going to submit that to be incorporated in the minutes, or at least brought to the attention of the committee.
Once minutes are approved, can they be added to?
Sure, you can.
Okay. They would probably go back to the Historic Preservation Committee for consideration first.
Mm-hmm. They don't have to change them, but they can.
But I agree with Trustee Gass. We're not approving minutes, and most of us weren't at. We're agreeing to accept them and to place them on file, and then they can be added to or subtracted from you using the regular process.
Okay, then.
These are brought to you and accepted because some committees might only meet once a year or twice a year, and you wouldn't see those minutes for a year later. So that's why they're placed the way they are.
So we're receiving them, not approving them.
Right.
Yeah, we might want to even change the
verb
that we use in the motions. I still think it's a good idea that we also would refer all of our minutes to the audio recordings on the website.
Pardon?
Just as a footnote on all the minutes that we have where we have an audio recording, just a little asterisk that says, for a full account of this meeting, visit our web. It doesn't even have to be the specific page of the website. You can just go to the home page and people can navigate to it.
But those don't stay on there forever. Minutes are forever.
When did we keep them off the website?
The new website requests that we only keep a year.
Ooh.
They would request that we keep less, but yes, for a year.
Well, we could put that in the statement.
Okay.
or we could say you may find them on the website, or but if I just want to refer people to let them know that we have a full transcript. There's a reason why we're doing
that. Or that we have them on file here.
Right.
We do have them on CD. I mean, we have them on a disk here.
Okay.
Instead of on the website.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, so they're only available on the website for a year.
Right.
But we have a permanent record here in
right.
the storage system.
Trustee Zeller.
Should we, under the action item for the consent agenda, should we change the word approval?
Yeah, I just talked to Debbie about that, yeah.
Okay.
You will be approving the village board meetings, but accepting the other committees.
Okay.
All right, I do have a motion and a second. Right? Trustee Green moved. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 16, reports and discussion regarding the recognition of committee members. It struck me over the past couple months as we are trying to find people to serve on the various committees, and we always seem to have openings on these committees, and after some of the work that some of these committees have done, including historic preservation, that they put in a lot of work. this comprehensive plan, the amount of work that went into that was unbelievable. And these people are not only not paid for their service, they're not really, we don't really do a good job of recognizing them at all. And, so looking at back at the personnel manual as to what we're giving people a plaque every 20 years that actually work here, and I'm definitely not suggesting that we give our committee members anything exorbitant, but I think we have to think of ways that we can recognize and show that we appreciate the hard work that they're doing. So that's why it's a discussion item. I don't know what direction that you think we should go, but I'm looking for ideas and ways to engage people who aren't currently engaged in our committees and retain and recognize the people who are working so hard on those committees. Trustee Zeller.
I have an idea, but I don't know if we could do this. But some of the committee members, I don't even know who they are. You know, and I've been involved with the village for some time and lived here all my life. I'm wondering, could we do a party at Green Isle and try to get everybody, all the committees, all the volunteer committee members to a party, and they might enjoy meeting some of the other people that are civically involved. Can we do that? Could we do that and put on a nice meal?
I don't see why we couldn't. Trustee Gass sort of mentioned this, and we've talked about this during the past year or so, about one way to sort of work better as a village is to gather socially with the employees. But I think that same logic applies, and maybe even more so, to the committee members who are even a little bit more removed than, and we have less interaction with than the folks who actually are going to. I think it's a fabulous idea.
I do too. I think we should do it this summer. If it ever gets here. Could we suggest that we look at the schedule, the reservation schedule, and work something in, Brad, that would work with all the reservations that are in place right now? Do you have any ideas? Do you have any thoughts about serving food in that building and how we could go about doing that?
Well, I guess if you're recognizing committees that are officially recognized by the village board, correct? That's what you're referring to, not the LOB beautification aspect, the other committees that are out there, the Little League committees, the girls softball. You're referring to just those, okay?
Yeah.
Because that was a discussion I brought up a couple of years ago, and the fear was forgetting somebody, forgetting to recognize a particular group or individual.
Yeah.
If you're.
Yeah, I think we're talking about the beautification. It's not an official. It's not an official committee of the village, so I think, you know, we would limit it to. The kinds of committees you'd find in the new organizational chart or the separate org chart that we're looking at.
Yeah, as far as you know, look at either preparing the food ourselves or looking at having the meals or something come in or grill something on that line.
Okay. Any other ideas? I mean, do you agree that we think we need to do something? I'm pretty adamant we need to do something. Are we all in agreement that we should probably?
Definitely, and I really like the idea of getting people together. Once they know each other, I think communication between committees could be helped that way. Also, communication between committees and staff. We seem to have them operating in silos, and the more they get to know each other, the better. So, along with thanking them for their service to the village.
What about some sort of award, even if it's not, even if there's no plaque or there's no, I mean, some recognition that someone could put in their resume or something that acknowledges the work that they were doing.
Previously, we did a resolution out. Normally, they could only stay for 10 years, and then they had to be off the committee for a year. Most of them stayed for 10 years, so after 10 years, we would give a resolution to each person. But now they're staying on longer because we don't have anybody to replace them.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, I want to suspend the rules for this discussion. Yeah.
I agree with you. I haven't done a lot of volunteer work with professional organizations, even like a plaque or a letter, something like that. And a meal would be great. I think, you know, that's a lot of hard work goes into it.
Yeah, I'm willing to have that conversation if they do. At least people are putting in, you know, they're putting in some
work. Yeah, or maybe even, you know, publish something in the paper. You know, the Village of Alloway wishes to thank, you know, do that once a year. I mean, people like to see their names in the paper. And then they get phone calls from you know, Aunt Minnie say, hey, I saw your name in the paper. I mean,
that's true.
And then,
you do.
In the other publication for consideration, All About Alloway.
Yeah,
that's our village publication that goes
one.
To.
That's an easy one.
Yeah. Well, if you think of anything else going forward, I just wanted to sort of throw that idea out there, let it germinate a bit. But I think we really need to think harder about how we can recognize these folks. We had talked earlier this year about the stipends, the number of trustees, and the stipends that trustees get, and how and. You know, we're working for infinitely more than our committee members are working for. They get nothing at all, and we have very little recognition, so it's time.
Could we have a date, or could we have a few possible dates set or brought back for March 17th?
Sure. Brad, could we?
Yeah,
it wouldn't have to be a weekend. I mean, Greenhow is going to be impossible on a weekend, right? We're talking about.
I was going to consider the second or fourth Tuesday of the month. Fourth could be part of the committee, but,
yeah.
But if you figure one of those nights, that gives a lot of time when at least the board typically meets is a Tuesday night. So,
and maybe we think about doing it twice, or people who can't make it, if you only get one time a year, that would kind of be a shame as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if they want to come twice, great.
Is there full kitchen facilities in there?
Excuse me?
Is there full kitchen facilities in there? There's a stove.
For the most part, there's a refrigerator, stove, microwave.
Sounds good. Penny's volunteering.
Well, I do know how to cook for masses. I mean, I don't mean the masses. Both, yes.
Just get a wafer and a little bit of wine then. It's something more substantial.
Isn't the game fee coming up?
Yeah, but I don't have to go for the game fee. The men did that.
All right. All right. Thanks, folks. I appreciate that. Is there a motion to adjourn? Trustee Genrich, seconded by Trustee Gast. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Roger.